we thought we were running the dry stock enterprise fairly well, controlling grass as well as we could, getting the most out of grass, getting fairly early grazings and fairly late grazings, but the finances, they just weren't adding up at that stage. And when I was out in New Zealand as part of the farm management course, Dad, I suppose he must have been doing a good bit of thinking or planning on his own, side, and he said, sure, maybe we'll go for it. He was able to see, the same as me, that I was looking to go farming, and there was a farm here, but the enterprise that we were running at that stage in the dry stock just wasn't viable as a two-person enterprise. Like,
hello, I'm Emma-Louise Coffey, and you're welcome to the Dairy Edge, the Chagas Dairy Podcast. We're bringing you the latest information, insights and opinion to improve dairy farm performance. On this week's episode, new entrant dairy farmer Liam Brophy talks through how he and his father Mark converted their family farm from dry stock to dairy and the successes and challenges they faced along the way.
The farm at home, Emma-Louise, it was your normal dry stock farm around these areas. We're running between 60 and 70 suckler cows, bringing the calves to weaning stage and selling them then. And we also had a ewe flock of about 150 ewes, bringing everything to the factory. It was your standard enough farm. We were running it fairly well, I suppose. Paddock system, trying to base it off grass. It was your standard enough suckler farm, really.
And bring us to today, Liam. What does the farm look like now?
So the farm today, we're milking 142 high EBI, predominantly black and white cows. The herd EBI is about 205. Last year, they did about 4.5 fat and about 3.7 protein. A little over 500 kilos of milk solids per cow and about 1.1 ton of concentrates. The milking platform is stocked at about 2.7. We've no extra carriers, only the dairy replacements, no beef stock, so it's all dairy on the farm now.
And Liam, talk us through, you know, putting the wheels in motion conversion to dairy. How did you go about that, and how was the, I suppose, the idea planted for you and I suppose the greater family?
Well, I suppose the idea of going to dairy came from me. I should say a farm partnership with Dad here. He's a beef dry stock farmer all his life, and but the idea of going to dairy came from me. So the idea was planted in my head. I suppose I was in fifth and sixth year, say around 2013, 2014. It was all leading up to the abolition of quotas, and I suppose I saw neighbours around here were planning on getting in when the quotas went, and I saw there was opportunities in it for young people. So I suppose that's where the idea was planted in my head, and it wasn't black and white for a long time that we'd go milking here, but I always had in my head that I wanted to milk cows somewhere.
And Liam, bring us then to the psyche of your dad. You mentioned that, you know, a dry stock farmer all his life, you know, this is a big change. Like, you know, how did that work and how long did that idea take to filter through with him?
It would have been when I was doing the leaving search, it was in 2015. I suppose that it was fairly clear at that stage that I had the intention of milking cows somewhere, whether it be for myself or on someone else's farm. And he was aware of that, like, but the thought of me coming home to farm, it wasn't, or milk cows here, wasn't 100% clear, like, but I suppose the grain or the idea was there at that stage. So when I did my leaving cert, I went to Gertine College after that, and I studied the dairy herd management level 6 course there, and worked away at that between the in college in lectures and then out on two farms, reasonably large scale. One was actually a new entrant a few years prior to that, so he had sort of gone through what we were thinking of doing. But then when After that, I completed the farm management course in the level 7 farm management course. And I suppose it was during that that we thought we were running the dry stock enterprise fairly well, controlling grass as well as we could, getting the most out of grass, getting fairly early grazings and fairly late grazings, but the finances, they just weren't adding up at that stage. And I suppose it was when I was out in New Zealand as part of the farm management course, that I suppose he must have been doing a good bit of thinking or planning on his own, on his own side. And he said, sure, maybe we'll go for it. And I suppose he was able to see the same as me, that I was looking to go farming, and there was a farm here, but the enterprise that we were running at that stage in the dry stock just wasn't viable as a 2-person enterprise. Like,
and you mentioned placements, so I guess was that your first introduction to physically working on dairy farms, be it your placements with Gertin? So you have 2 placements there. You know, the farm management course, you took the option of going abroad. So again, you were exposed to 3 different farms from that course.
Yeah, I suppose working on dairy farms at any real level, I had done a small bit of relief milking during my leaving cert year, but it was very, very small amount. It was the placement in Gertin was my first real sort of full time on the ground working on a dairy farm. And that followed on then to the farm management level 7 course. On my second year placement in Gertin, there was 2 fellas on the farm that were either just after finishing the farm management course or were in their second year of the course. And I suppose they were just telling me what was going on in the course and what was available to them. And I suppose me not coming from a dairy background, I knew I had a lot to learn. So I thought I was getting the best of both worlds there. I'd be full time working on farm along with being exposed to research in Moor Park. And
then to put yourself in the boots of somebody who is not necessarily from a farm like yourself, who would have done the, you know, the herd management course and led on to the farm management course. You know, are they looking at a management job, or is there a scope for them to maybe milk their own cows or gain some ownership within a dairy farm business?
Yeah, absolutely. There's massive scope, Emma Louise. There's a good few friends of mine that went through the courses with me that didn't come from farms, but are now farming in their own right, either through share farming or land leasing. And I suppose there's a lot of them in farm management courses, but they're building themselves up. They're building up a herd while milking or while working on farms. I suppose a massive asset to the industry, in my view anyway, is the land mobility service. It's almost oversubscribed. There's so much interest in it from both sides, from both landowners and from prospective young farmers. I think it's a massive asset to the industry that people from outside of Ireland look on.
And you're talking kind of like that matchmaking service. And I don't know the figures, but they do talk about the thousands of hectares that have, you know, fed into the land mobility service. So, you know, quite useful for some. If we go back then, Liam, to the practicalities of the conversion, firstly to the stock, you talk about massive figures, 500 kilos of solids, at 4.5 fat, 3.7 protein, you know, really, really good numbers, high EBI there of 205. So talk through the stock. You got a communication from home, a green light, maybe we want to go for this, from your dad. So where did you go about sourcing stock?
Yeah, when I was out in New Zealand, Emma Louise, I suppose dad, we were in constant contact, obviously, on WhatsApp. And we decided at that stage that sure, maybe we'll go with it. We'll go for it. We have a farm here that's suitable for dairy farming. Most of it's in the one block. So it was in last few months, I suppose, my placement in New Zealand, we decided we'll go for it. So we decided that we'd buy young stock. So we bought in the fall of 2019, we bought 2019 springborn heifers. They were all bought private, and almost all from around the County of Laois, high BI black and whites. That was the general criteria. And yeah, so I got home around Christmas in 2019, and Dad had sourced the first 45 weanling heifers at that stage. And again, he was sending on that farm's co-op reports and DBI reports for them heifers. And yeah, we got them home in January of 2020. So I suppose that was the line in the sand. We were heading a certain direction. We knew for definite. The plan was to milk, calve them down in the spring of 2021. And that was the plan, and we were working towards that at that stage. So
that 45, you call them weaning heifers, you know, how have you gone from those 45 to the 140 cows that you have on farm today?
Yeah, so them 45 heifers, they were added to with more weaning or yearling heifers at that stage. So we calved down, or we put in calf 75 maiden heifers to calve down in 2021. So that's what we calved down then, 2021, 75 maiden heifers. We decided to go with maiden heifers as opposed to buying cows from a health point of view, I suppose, more so than anything. We weren't buying in anyone else's problems. I suppose we were sure of it, not that anyone would sell problems, but we were certain we were starting from a young herd, and we were going on the theory that that should help with feet and cell count. And it has so far. Everything's working to that point. And then every year since then, in 2022, we calved down 100 cows. The original herd was added to with more in-calf heifers. And then last year in 2023, we added another 40 in-calf heifers. So the herd was added to by the purchase of in-calf heifers.
And that hasn't hampered performance, Liam. You know, you mentioned at the outset, you've, you know, there's 142 cows calving down this year. You know, last year's performance, so year three in milk, 500 kilos of solids, 4.5 fat, 3.7 protein, you know, really good genetics coming through there, and I suppose management has a part to play in that. But you know, at year three and a lot of heifers in the system, it's still an immature herd.
Yeah, it is a young herd. I think last year our average lactation was something around 2.2, so it is a young herd.
And Liam, that 500 kilos of milk solids, you know, immature herd, you know, I suppose, what does the future cow look like on the farm?
The future cow, in my eyes, is, I suppose, a slightly smaller cow than what we have now. The maintenance figure on the herd now is around 10 or 11. So that's a live weight of around 570. I'd like to get that down to around 540 and do the same kilos of milk solids. That's the breed names at the minute, while holding fertility, obviously.
If we look at the infrastructure piece, you know, parlour, talk us through that. You know, dry stock farm, you know, no milking facilities on farm. So how did you go about that?
So, yeah, as you said, Emma-Louise, there was no infrastructure on farm, very, very little. It was all straw accommodation here. So before we started or done any building, I suppose we looked at the sheds we have, and we sort of tried to see, could we fit in a milking parlour into existing sheds? I suppose in an effort to keep costs down, but it wasn't really going to work. We were going to have to sacrifice some pint. It wasn't going to be a good job. So me being a young farmer, I suppose at that stage, I was lucky that we could avail of the TAMS grants. So we decided to go for a greenfield milking parlour. And I suppose that was in 20 2020, we were always told to start in plenty of time, give ourselves a good year before you intend on starting to milk. So we were planning the milking parlor in January, February 2020, and we were ready to go with the planning in March of 2020, and then of course COVID hit. So that caused a knock on. The planning office closed, and it was all a knock on. You couldn't move forward. You couldn't apply for TAMS until you had the planning, and you couldn't apply for finance until you had TAMS approval. So it was all one knock on, and meaning that we ended up calving the heifers into a temporary milking parlour in 2021, and ended up doing most of the season in the temporary milking parlour. But since then, anyway, and in November of 2021, we eventually got finished our parlour, permanent parlour, and we moved in. So that was built. We also had to put in a road system and a water system. We put the water system in 2020, October 2020, and the road system in then in the spring of 2021. And again, we were all straw at that stage, and we were all straw for 2021 and 2022. We put in our first cubicles in last year in October, November of 23. So up until last day, we had straw accommodation for about 100 cows. So I suppose we were using them first and building up cow numbers before we built infrastructure to carry the extra cows.
And the thought behind that, Liam, you know, is that a finance decision, you know, to hold off? Because I suppose a lot more work in your straw bedding versus your cubicle. Tell us about that.
We always used a lot of straw here, and I suppose historically we used to have a small amount of tillage, so there was always straw around, and we are in a very mixed farming part of the country, so there is good availability of straw. I suppose that has a big bearing on it. Yeah, there is a lot of work in straw, but we have a straw blower here for years, and it takes a lot of the work out of it.
And Liam, take us then to you know, you had some, I suppose, issues and headaches in relation to COVID. And I'm sure there's lots of people listening who, you know, had the same hardships and couldn't get the milking parlour built. But was there a huge sense of achievement when, you know, the first milk started flowing from the heifers that had calved down, or, you know, the first milk check came in the door?
Looking back, there was a massive sense of achievement, I suppose. Yeah. The first collection, it was a massive, massive move for the farm. I suppose it was nearly a bigger thing for Dad than me. I was used to working on dairy farms and seeing milk going out the gate. Like, it was just another day almost, to a point. Like, but I'd say it was a bigger thing for Dad. He was always selling stock, dry stock, but now there was milk going off the farm, so it was a massive line in the sand, I suppose. But at the time, I'd say it was in February. It's the same as every spring calf and dairy farm. That was done. We're in a temporary milking parlour. It was a manual wash. We had to figure out how to wash the bulk tank at that stage and move on to the next job.
Yeah, I guess maybe not so much time to reflect at that point. To move on then, Liam, you know, talk us through getting outside the farm gate. You know, you're young, there's a lot going on. There's 140 cows or so there. You're working in partnership with your dad. Things are busy, and we can all find things to do to fill our time. But is there an opportunity for you to get off farm?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. As I said previously there, I'm in a discussion group, a leash-based discussion group, and I'm in a national discussion group with young farmers as well. They're very important in my calendar anyway. You're getting out and you're meeting people that are in the same situation, dealing with the same problems. It's getting off farm, even at the busy times, I feel is very important. And then I suppose, slightly away from farming, but only slightly, I'm fairly heavily involved in MOCRA. I'm a member of Portlaoise Mocra Club here, and yeah, fairly busy at that. I'm Laois County Chair at the minute, and I'm on the National Ag Affairs Committee. So I have plenty of things going on outside the farm. I'm not going to get bored anyway.
You mentioned, you know, the people you're meeting are dealing with the same problems that you have, and I guess it doesn't necessarily build when you feel it's not just you, I guess. If we look then at the journey over the last number of years, you know, so it's 2020, there was replacement heifers put in calf on the farm. The milk started flowing in the spring of 2021. You're in year four now, Liam. If you were to look back, is there anything you would have done differently along the conversion process?
Looking in hindsight, I suppose we would have started planning earlier, but that was down to COVID, I suppose, is the problem there. But sure, no one saw that coming. So I suppose all you can really do is control the controllables to a point. Like, give yourself plenty of time. If you think you're starting to plan, if you think you're giving yourself plenty of time to plan or look for stock, start earlier. if it's sitting there waiting, if the milking parlour was sitting there waiting for a month or two, sure, what's the problem? It'll be there, like, when you start.
It's an interesting one, Liam. Control the controllables. You know, the COVID thing, I suppose, was completely out of your control, and things that you did do along that timeline were things like your roads and your water, which are essentials and you know, important to get the thing started. I think it's an interesting way you articulated your education, Liam, and you know, you mentioned, you know, five different farms that you worked on across a 4-year period, you know, through the dairy herd management course and then the farm manager course. And I suppose it's important that we lean on these people, you know, when we have difficulties or we're thinking of making changes, because, you know, I think dairy farmers in general in Ireland are incredibly generous with their time. And for somebody like you in, you know, the early stages of your career, there's a lot to learn from them. And, you know, people are so generous to share. Thank you, Liam.
Thanks, Emma-Louise. Thanks very much.
That's it for this week's episode of the Dairy Edge podcast, and my thanks to Liam Brophy for joining me on this week's show. Don't forget to rate, review, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, go to the Chagas website at chagas.ie. I'm Emma-Louise Coffey, and join us next time for your Dairy Edge.